Today is May 9th, Erev Rosh Chodesh Sivan, special day to daven, and we're just in the middle of the reasons behind the mitzvah of eating matzah. We mentioned several ideas. First of all, the fact that we left in haste from Mitzrayim, which the Tiferes Yisrael mentions is not just a way of appreciating the fact that we were saved, but also the fact that we were saved in a way where Rabbi Shalom sped up the timetable, which was extremely important at that time, although lest we fall into a deeper point of no return. We also had an idea that Zman in general, time, the concept of time, the phenomenon of time, is something that is more closely connected to Teva, to nature, and that's because we know that everything in the world was created within the context of time. And we mentioned that is Oise Bereshis, a pshat from the Siach Yitzchak. That's the pshat in the whenever it says in the davening Baruch Oise Bereshis, that Hashem created Bereshis. It doesn't mean necessarily Maise Bereshis, the creations that He created at the time, as is mentioned in the beginning of the Torah, but rather it means the creation of time itself. He created Zman, and within that context, then created everything else. Why is that relevant to matzah and chametz? Because matzah is something that is less dependent on time, duration of time rather. It is there's much more emphasis put on the time factor when you're baking matzahs, but it means the duration of time through the process is much shorter. If you've ever been to a matzah bakery, do you know how many seconds the matzah is in the oven? You wouldn't believe it. Take a guess. I was in an enormous bread factory. They put the dough into the oven for about 7 minutes, which I thought was a pretty short amount of time. But that's after it's been in a proofing thing, and where it rises and so on. The matzah is in the oven. I watched a video. I took a video of it and then watched it again to time it. It's 26 seconds. And if you leave it in for 27 seconds, it gets burnt, and 25 seconds is a little too soft and problematic. Fascinating. Just ironic that there's much more of an emphasis on time when you're dealing with baking matzah.
Was that a hand bakery or was that a machine?
Hand bakery. Why, machine is longer, you think?
I don't know.
Probably not that much longer. In fact, I would think it's less because there's less burnt part in the machine. 26 seconds, that's pretty short period of time. But the duration of time that's necessary in order for it to bake is much less, and therefore, says the Siach Yitzchak, or actually says the Maral, when Hashem wants us to commemorate and to relive the Yetzias Mitzrayim, one of the most important factors, as we mentioned before, from the Svarnai, it's not enough to celebrate the fact that we left in haste. We exchanged one freedom, one servitude for another servitude. We have to remember that. We went free from Mitzrayim. Okay, now what does free mean? HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem, we spoke about this at great length, that the whole purpose is to be able to then be free. Rav Hirsch says it so eloquently, to be able to be free to do what we really want to do, which is what? Deep down, every yid, in his neshama, what does he want to do? He wants to serve the Ribbono Shel Olam. Okay, so that was another idea, that it's very much tied to Zman, and that's why we eat matzah. And then did we start the Mor Nevuchim? We didn't do the Mor Nevuchim. Okay, so the next source on your page, Sefer Mor Nevuchim, is another idea from the Rambam. The Rambam says like this: Omnam hamidais hu sheyia adam zecher yemei hara biyemei hatayva. person should remember, in the days of plentiful, he should always remember. He should always be humbled by his beginnings. You know, you find very often that people who become great executives and remain that way are people who built it from the bottom up. He was once a paper boy, and then he did this, and then this, and usually it's not an inheritance. People who inherit businesses and so on, oftentimes they run it to the ground because they don't have an appreciation of what it takes to build it. People who build it from the bottom up often have a greater ability to retain it because they know what it takes. They know what kind of sacrifice it takes. But it's an interesting idea that a person should always remember when, hopefully everybody should be successful. When a person reaches a measure of success in any area, they should always remember their humble beginnings, always remember how they started out initially. So for instance, a person becomes wealthy, you always you remember that time. You remember the time that you were poor. I know of a fellow today who is a multi-millionaire, probably a billionaire by now, a frum Jew. And I remember years ago, before he became close to a billionaire, probably today he might be a billionaire, but certainly when he was already a multi-millionaire, he said to somebody he remembers the day not so long before, it was like 5 or 6 years before, he didn't have a quarter to make a wash in the laundromat. That's how poor he was. So that's pretty... So people give the famous mashal, I believe maybe it's the Dubna Magid, that every year when a person becomes wealthy, he wins the lottery, for instance. You win the lottery, so every year on the day that you win the lottery, you remember, you bring out all your old clothing and brings out your it may be photos of your old home and the humble beginnings. And it reminds a person of how much they should appreciate and not take for granted what they have. So, therefore, Bavur Sheyarbe L'Hodos L'Hashem, in order to increase your praise of the Ribbono Shel'Olam and gratitude to Ribbono Shel'Olam, V'Sheyilmed Midas Anava V'Shiflus, this is the key. Matzah teaches us humility. And the Midas Anava. So therefore, Yoichal Matzah U'Morar B'Pesach, Lizkar Mashi Iralanu, we should eat matzah morar and Pesach to remember what happened to us. V'chein yetzu min abatim lishkayim besukkos, you should also go out of your houses and sit in your sukkah k'mo shiyasu hashruyim b'tzar, shoichnim b'tbarais, the people who are nomads, the people wandering around that have they don't have great fortune. They're traveling around, with their backpack, from place to place. And the same idea, kibesukas eshavdim b'nei Yisrael. So this is a very, very important thing. So another aspect, another dimension of matzah is not just that it's a lechem oini diachola of a son of ba'ar de Mitzrayim that we ate while we were in Mitzrayim, but rather, and then we had a redemption. To appreciate that we were so lowly, that we were in our situation was so pitiful, so we eat matzah and we eat maror. We didn't eat maror in Mitzrayim, but it reminds us of that bitterness and it reminds us of our lowly state that we were in at the time in Mitzrayim, and that's a very, very important thing to remember, no matter how successful and how affluent a person might be, how free a person might be in the later on, they should always remember that in the past. A very important exercise. Okay, now we have a maral, also in Gvuras Hashem, but a little later. He speaks about Holach Ma'anya. This is the last reference here. Now, we spoke yesterday about the fact that there's a great contradiction, there's a stira. There's a great contradiction within matzah itself, and that is, on one hand, it represents the haste. On the other hand, it represents, so the haste would be an appreciation of the redemption. And the other hand, it's lechem oini diachol avasana, reminds us of the of the servitude of while we were avadim, we were slaves. Now, if I remember correctly, I haven't seen it in years, but I believe that the Abarbanel on the Haggadah, I don't remember all the details, but the way he explains the Manishtana, maybe others do this as well, the different questions that we ask in the Manishtana, the bottom line theme, according to the Abarbanel, if I'm not quoting this incorrectly, is that everything has a dual, we have dual messages. We have conflicting messages in everything that we do on the Seder night. On one hand, we're dipping, which is a sign of freedom, but it's dipping into salt water, which is a reminder of the bitterness. So everything has a dual message, and really, that's really the main question is that the child has to turn to the father and say, "What's going on here? What are we celebrating? Is it affluence? Is it appreciation? Is it servitude?" And the answer is, "Avadim ayinu l'farav Mitzrayim." We really want to emphasize both, because like we just saw from the Rambam, the way to truly appreciate your freedom today is to sense how terrible it was in the past. That contrast is a very important thing, to feel the contrast. And so we had asked the question way back, didn't we? We said, while it's true that somebody who is rich should try to remember the times that they were poor, but what happens if a person wins the lottery? So he's not poor anymore, and then he loses all his money. Does he then celebrate every year the time that he won the lottery? Did we ask this question in the past? No one remembers this? We have a contrast. We were poor. We were slaves. Rabbi Yishev took us out. So, very nice. So we celebrate. It's wonderful. But now we're back in Golis. Now we're Akati Avdei Achashverosh. We're still back. We're back in Golis. We still have Shibud Malchiyos. So what are we celebrating that we once had? Once upon a time, we were redeemed. Very nice. That's like rubbing salt in the wound, isn't it?
We have a hope that situation will be restored someday.
So imagine a person who was free. He's put in jail. He spends 10 years in jail, right? And then he's a big simcha in his life. He's freed from jail. Yeah? And then 6 months later, he's back in jail. So while he's in jail, he's going to celebrate the day that he left. To the degree that it gives him hope, okay? But to celebrate that day is a little strange. Whoa. Okay. You're saying that we're not in a situation as bad as in Mitzrayim. And probably, to a certain degree, you're right, because in Mitzrayim it was the 49th level of Tumah. We were almost, on the brink of being lost forever. Okay. My son said to me, when I asked this question, he said to me, there are certain things that we learned from Mitzrayim. So as far as level, I don't know where we're holding today. In certain ways, it seems that the world around us is far more decadent than anything I could imagine in Mitzrayim. But I could be wrong. It could be Mitzrayim was much worse. But the world around us, we could certainly sympathize with the people that in Mitzrayim, the influence of the Mitzrayim was terrible. But what he said to me, my son, which is right, he said, we learned certain things from Mitzrayim that we never lost. Well, we went back into Golis, similar to what you're saying, Reb Michal. And this, I said to him, I said, okay, what was it? Aha, what was it? So we had mentioned a while back that when Hashem, we're coming up to Shavuos, we're going to celebrate Matan Torah, when the Rebbeinu Shalom reintroduces himself to the Jewish people, what does he say? I'm Hashem, your God, right? If I was the one writing the Torah, it's a good thing I wasn't, but if I was the one writing the Torah, and if I was Hashem, one would think, I wanted to introduce myself to the Jewish people, what would I say?
I created the heavens and earth.
I created the heavens and earth. I'm the one, and I own this place. This is my place. I'm the owner. You know that story about the, they say this, the, there was a guy standing in front of a skyscraper in Manhattan. He was smoking a cigarette. So someone said, I'm not pro-smoking in any which way, but it's a, I'm pro good laugh. Anyway, the guy smoking a cigarette, so someone came over to me and says, you know how terrible it is for your health. And besides everything else, he says, it's so expensive. I don't know what a pack of cigarettes costs, maybe $10 a pack of cigarettes. You got to be nuts. How many packs of cigarettes do you smoke a day? He says, I smoke two packs a day. How many years have you been smoking? He says, 30 years. He said, 30 years? You're out of your mind. Add up all the money that you spent on the cigarettes. If you would have taken that money and slowly invested, it would have grown and grown and grown. You could have been such a wealthy man. And he's looking at a skyscraper behind him. He says, this building could have been yours. The guy takes another puff and he says, this building is mine. Okay. I don't know what the lesson of that story is. The Rebbe Shlomo comes and says, I am the boss. I own this place. The whole world you're in, I created it. You're mine. Wouldn't you think that should be the... So the Mefarshim say, Hashem said, Anoichi Hashem Alekecha Asher Tisichum Eretz Mitzrayim, because there were certain things that we learned from Yetzias Mitzrayim that had a greater impression on the Jewish people than the awe of observing the world and saying, wow, Hashem created this. Now, part of the reason probably is because we weren't around to actually witness the creation of the world, and this has just happened to them, so as far as in their little world, so to speak, their relatively little world, it was much more dramatic and had much more of an effect on them, the fact that they were actually redeemed from Mitzrayim, from which no one ever escaped before. Excuse me. But on the other hand, there were certain things that were learned from Mitzrayim that were never lost. Very, very profound things, to the point that, like the Ramban says in Parshas Bay, the Rebbeinu wants us to remember that every single day. So he gives us many, many mitzvos that are zecher l'yetzias Mitzrayim. He gave us a one-time shot. And then there are booster shots. I think there's a Rashbam in Chumash that speaks about this very often. My father speaks about this as whenever he has a chance to speak about Pesach, he often mentions this, Rashbam. He calls it a booster shot. We have a mitzvah every day to do mitzvah. We have many mitzvahs to do every day that are Zeichel Yetzias Mitzrayim. You put on tefillin as Zeichel Yetzias Mitzrayim. Shabbos as Zeichel Yetzias Mitzrayim. All these mitzvahs as Zeichel Yetzias Mitzrayim. What happens? Once a year, we commemorate, we relive the Yetziah from Mitzrayim in a very, very deep and profound and all-encompassing way. Tremendous, tremendous inspiration. And then every day of the year, we do little things. They're like little booster shots to strengthen the initial impact of that major, major lesson. And that's the lesson of Pesach itself, which we relive. But in general, when we speak about what happened then in that generation, the Rebbeinu Shlomo says, you just went through a metamorphosis. You just went through a transition. You just went through an enormous, enormous change. And I don't want you to ever forget it. So when I asked my son about this, I said, what did they learn from Yetzias Mitzrayim? One of the things he said was interesting. He said was achdus. They learned to remain cohesive, to be together. There's many, many sources for this, which we won't get into right now. It was an interesting answer. But there's certainly a lot of things that we learned from Mitzrayim. One of them is humility, as we mentioned before. But there are certain things that we learned from Mitzrayim that we simply will not forget. And so, following on that idea, when we ask the question of a person who was in jail and then was released, and then is put back into jail, well, if he learned the first time, for instance, for argument's sake, he learned that if he has good behavior, he'll get out quicker, right? Let's say he learned that from the first time. If you're on good behavior, you'll get out quicker. If you take a rehabilitation program, you'll get out quicker. If he learned that the first time, it'll make his stay today much easier and much quicker as well. So there's certain principles that we learned from Yetzias Mitzrayim, that even though today we're back in Galus, maybe as far as level as well, like Rabbi Chil is saying, but certain things that we learned that we never lost. And that's going to help us. And that's one of the reasons why the Rebbe Hashem wants us to commemorate Yetzias Mitzrayim each year. Okay, but let's see the Maral here. The Maral says like this. Halachma Anya, he addresses the contradiction that I mentioned, that on one hand we're celebrating the servitude, and on the other hand we're celebrating the redemption. So he says like this. Ki loy nimtza b'shum makayim, we do not find in any place loy b'kosuv, v'loy b'mishneh, v'loy b'talmud. Might be a startling statement. There's nowhere in the Torah, in the Mishnah, and not even in the Gemara, Shamitzriim hayu ma'achilim es Yisrael matzah, that the Jewish people, that the Mitzriim would feed the Jewish people matzah. Even though we say that in the Haggadah, halach ma'anya diachalav asana ba'ar the Mitzrayim, right? But it doesn't say anywhere. Someone mentioned, who mentioned it yesterday about the fact that it was, yeah, there we go. Okay. So that matzah was used as a food for poor people because it was cheap and it didn't go stale very quickly, or it always it starts off stale originally when you first make it, and that it lasts in the people's stomach, etc. So it's the food of choice for masters to give their slaves, right? But
we don't see the prefer- we really don't see the preferers anywhere.
Right. So that's what he's saying. You don't find anywhere that the Mitzrayim gave it to us. And so while we said there's one thought that it celebrates the Geula, because while we were rushing out it didn't get a chance to rise, etc. On the other hand, we also mentioned that there's a many mefarshim, and it actually says it in the Haggadah that it celebrates, it commemorates, it reminds us of the servitude, because that's what we ate. Well, says the Maral, the real truth is that can't be the reason. And he's, by the way, commenting on the words halach ma'anya, so he's very aware that that was so he's saying, where did the Baal Haggadah get this idea? Diachola b'sona b'ar de Mitzrayim. You don't find it anywhere in the Torah, not in the Mishnah, not in the Gemara. V'adarab. To the contrary, in the Sefri, it says, in Parshas Balayischa, on the Pasuk, Zacharnu es hadaga shenoichu mitzrayim chinam, I don't even know what the Sefri says, but he's quoting the Pasuk there at least. I cut out that piece. I'm not sure what his point was over there. But the Jewish people obviously had some sort of desirable food, that when they were eating the man in the Midbar, they kept on saying, well, we remember the good food we had in Mitzrayim. What good food? Halach ma'anya diachalav son of Dara the Mitzrayim. So what's going on? Not only that, the pasuk says, like we said earlier, lo yisechal av chomet shivas yomim teichal av matzais lechem oini ki b'chipazin yatzasim in Mitzrayim. The Torah says not because diachalav son of Dara the Mitzrayim, that we ate it in Mitzrayim, but we left Mitzrayim. When we left Mitzrayim, it was in haste and it didn't have a chance to rise. So what's this whole business about that the bread that our forefathers ate in Mitzrayim? V'im lechem oini nikra al shem shemachil enoisei ha'oni. If it's called lechem oini, as an affliction because it's given to an oni, to poor people, so lama amra teira teichol av matzais lechem oini shemachil enoisei ha'aniyim ki b'chipazin yotzasa. So give him lechem oini, which is the bread of poor people. Why? Because we left. So he's really just underscoring the exact contradiction that we mentioned earlier. If you're commemorating the Geula, if you're commemorating the redemption, what's the point in calling it Aini, affliction? And therefore the Maral takes a unique approach, something that really the Ramban alluded to, correct? Omnam, pirish hadavar ki hamatza nikra lechem Aini, Hepech matzah ashira. The opposite of matzah ashira. We mentioned that yesterday. It's very unusual. But if I said to you, what is the opposite of poor? What would you say? Is rich. Yes? Bread of affliction. Okay? So matzah ashira. In what way is matzah ashira? You have other things mixed in. And regular matzah that we know of is just bread and water. Now, what's the point of stressing that matzah doesn't have other things mixed in it? Shekasher yesh b'shemen u'dvash nikra ashir. When you mix in oil, honey, it becomes matzah ashir. Ke'adavar hazeh ma'ashir alechem. It richens up the recipe. V'zeh ki ha'oni she'ein loy ela atzmai ve'ein loy mamayin rak atzmai v'gufay. Oni is symbolic of somebody who has nothing but himself. He's stripped of everything. Someone who's destitute, that's all they have. You ever see these people, sadly, on the side of the road, and they have their little, you know, suitcase or a little couple packages, and they're homeless. They have nothing. They have nothing. Unfortunately, many of those are emotionally disturbed people, unfortunately, because often people who are truly homeless have, there are plenty of shelters and plenty of soup kitchens that could provide for these people, and for some reason, emotionally, they're not capable of remaining there. But in any case, sad as it might be, that's, you ever see a guy like a tramp, you know, all you have is a backpack, and then that's it. Now, there's a feeling of freedom, a feeling of divesting yourself of connection to everything. There's a feeling of freedom that a person has from not having anything with them. I always admire these people who travel with nothing. They travel in this little tiny car. When I travel, I bring the kitchen sink. I bring everything. In fact, one time I went on a trip with my in-laws. We went to New Hampshire, and my mother-in-law brought the crock pot, the cholent pot. And I said to her, what's going on? We're going on a trip, you know, like make a couple sandwiches. No, don't worry. When we got there, we stayed overnight. She put up a stew in the morning. And when we came back from our long day, it was amazing. But we brought a big crock pot on the trip. It was a little bit bizarre. But in any case, people who have nothing, to a certain degree, they may be hungry, they may be, you know, lacking the comforts of certain things, but there's a certain freedom that comes with not having a connection, not having any belongings with you. V'hamatzah gam kein kasher ein ba rak etzem ha'isiv, when all it has is just the dough itself. She'atzah ha'isiv hu ha'mayim v'ha'kemach, just water and flour. V'zeh atzah ha'isiv u'bazeh hava lechem ayni. So the lechem ayni that we're referring to in the Torah is, it is a simple bread, if I would put it that way. It's a very simple bread. It doesn't have much sophistication. It doesn't have any extra things in it. And therefore, it is a celebration of the freedom that we got. We were asking if it's lechem ayni, if it's poor man's bread, then how could it be a celebration of the freedom? The answer is, we're not referring to the fact that it was fed to poor people, but rather that we went through an experience that is reflected by the nature of this recipe. The nature of this recipe is that it's very simple, it's very basic. There's nothing, no extra things within it. Whereas till now we were very much connected and subservient to the Mitzrayim, and now we're free, we're disconnected. So he asks like this, maybe you'll ask, Ma inyana anius el acherus? Behem shnei afochim heim acherus v'anius. You want to tell me that the reason why it's called matzah lechem ayni is because it's a very simple bread and it's disconnected from anything else, and it's free from everything else? Sorry, disconnected, a poor person. What does that have to do with freedom? Halidover zein kasha ki anius, this is what I was saying before, anius ba'atzmei hayro ala geula. If I asked you who's a freer person, a poor person or a rich person? In a certain sense, a rich person has the freedom to sit on a comfortable chair, to have a good night's rest. There's certain freedoms that come with having more material wealth. But on the other hand, you're connected. Mar ben achasim, mar ben daiga. Chazal tell us the more The more you have, the more worries you have. Because the more things you're, right? Imagine a person who says, ah, if only I would win Powerball lottery, $500 million. You know what I say to people? If I'd win a million or two, I'd be very happy. But I guarantee you, if you win $500 million, it's a ticket to being miserable. Absolutely. And I think the statistics are such. Is that right? That the people, right? So I've said that to many people. I said, hey, God, don't worry. Test me. Right? But the idea is, imagine you're going to use your money. What are you going to do with $500 million? What percentage of that are you going to use for yourself? What do you really need for yourself? Tell a person before they win the Powerball. What percentage do you really, really need? You want to buy a little better car? You want to buy a more reliable this? You want to buy a little bigger house? A little nicer, but not, you know, you don't want to go overboard. You know, this is the sense of reason that you have before you win the money. Of course, after you win the money, right? But you say that to a person, how much are you going to use? 10 million, 20 million, let's say 20 million. Oh, I'm going to use 20 million for myself, and the rest, some of it, 50% of it, I'm going to invest for my children, and the other 50% I'm going to give away to tzedakah. I always tell people who say this to me, think about it for a minute. Imagine you had $100 million to give away to tzedakah. You know what kind of upheaval that's going to make in your life? Where are you going to give it? You're going to have a line of collectors out the door. You know, Rabbi Dunner in England, we're running out of time. He said one time he met a mishulach, a collector on the street. He had a broomstick. He says, what are you doing with a broomstick? He says, no. He says, there's many people that they don't want the collectors to come and ring their doorbell. So at the hours that the collectors come around, they installed a gate, you know, like iron doors in front of their door, so that you can't reach into the, what do you call it? So they lock the gate. So he says, he can't reach the doorbell. So what he does is he takes the broomstick. Anyway, but the idea is that someone who has money is very much subservient, so to speak, to, as they call it, the almighty dollar, right? You know, you're really an eved, you're a slave to your money, and even if it means giving it out to tzedakah, it'll take you hours, days, months, whatever it is, to figure out what you want. You're not just write one check and give it out. Once you're in the driver's seat, you're gonna spend time. It's very, very time consuming. Not chas shalom, I'm against tzedakah. Don't get the wrong idea. So what he's saying is that in a certain sense, Geula means that you're disconnecting from your master and you will now be free. You'll now be like an ani in a sense that in as much as we view materialism as something that is governing us, that it's sort of shackles in a certain way. Like, you can't be free to just run around and, you know, for 2 weeks and not eat anything. You're sort of, would you say you're a slave to your appetite? Would you say that? To a certain degree, you are. You have no choice but to eat, right? You're not free to run around without food. So wherever you go, you got to take two suitcases, one for milchigs and one for fleishigs, right? That's not, no. But the point is, you, in as much as you're dependent on other things, that makes you less free. Well, a wealthy man can have better food, so there's a certain aspect of it that makes him free and on that level, but as far as the just the basics of being connected or disconnected, being dependent on other things, a person who's free is independent. Independence, there's a certain element, a certain dimension of independence that a poor person has that a rich person does not enjoy. And we'll see next time we meet. We'll explain this a little better. We'll go a little further, but the Maharal will say, that's when we say lechem oini, what it really means is we're trying to say this bread, which is free and independent of extra things, we, in the same sense, experienced that. We became simply independent and on our own. Okay, Shkoyach. You feel free to keep the paper, and I'll just distribute them next time, the rest of them. Okay. Yeah, Shkoyach.